Zen has brought beauty and inner peace to the peoples of many Eastern nations. It has inspired great art and gentle customs. It has bestowed the accepting mind and the grateful heart, promoting everywhere graciousness of spirit and courage of conviction. Zen is part of our priceless heritage of wisdom and has survived the centuries because men have found it a vital help in generations of fear and uncertainty. As we now live in the most critical time ever recorded in history, we experience the pressing need for a better and deeper understanding of life. I will therefore try to explain in simple words what Zen means to me, not as an abstract system of belief, but as an immediate guide to conduct. Man's eternal quest is for the untroubled self hidden in the depths of his own eternal being. To find this self is to discover the purpose of human existence. To understand this self is to know the laws of human redemption. And to live in harmony with this self is to enjoy a serene existence. As the surface of the sea is troubled by the winds, so the thoughts and emotions of men are troubled by the storms of circumstance. But the deeper parts of the sea are not troubled by the tempest. And in each of us is a region of peace where self abides forever in blessedness. Buddha said of the enlightened self, "It is deep, immeasurable, unfathomable, like the great ocean." To most students of Oriental philosophy, Zen is a strange and austere school of self-discipline, cradled in the inscrutable East and utterly beyond the comprehension of Western man. It seems to be a doctrine of contradictions, taught in riddles and enigmas. Actually, it is the simple and direct path that leads to the end of suffering. Of this Buddha wrote, "Having achieved serenity, we become tranquil in body, tranquil in mind." The story of Zen begins more than 25 centuries ago, while Gautama Buddha was still preaching to his disciples along the dusty roads of Hindustan. One day, the great Indian sage came to a place called the Vulture's Peak, and gathering his students about him, discoursed to them about the mystery of the great peace. As he was speaking, a stranger stepped forward to make an offering, and bowing before the Buddha, placed in his hands a glorious lotus blossom of golden color. The sage remained silent for a long time, gazing serenely at the beautiful flower. At last, one of the disciples smiled slightly. The master then turned to him, saying, "I perceive that you alone have received the doctrine." Thus the realization of the quiet way was silently transmitted to the waiting heart of the truth seeker. There is no adequate way of defining Zen. The word itself means abstract meditation. Zen is not actually a religion, a philosophy, or a science, as we understand these terms in the West. Yet it seeks the end which all these strive to attain. It is the immediate experience of an existence beyond mind, by which all the habits and attitudes of the individual can be controlled and directed to their proper ends, the knowing of that which is eternally true. Bodhidharma was the first patriarch of the Zen sect. In the early part of the 6th century, this grim-faced Buddhist monk made the long and perilous journey from India to China. His teaching had a profound and lasting effect on Chinese culture, and in due time it was transmitted to Japan, where it has flourished ever since. According to Bodhidharma's original statement, Zen is transmitted without any definite reference to the sacred writings, though derived from them. It is a realization based upon inner experience alone and is not dependent upon spoken or written instruction. It is concerned totally with the inner life of the individual and leads to enlightenment through the understanding of one's own nature. Because Zen is not based upon the authority of a teacher or a teaching, it must result from discoveries which thoughtful persons make when they become weary of misfortune. These discoveries are called experiences, and each arises from the one directly preceding it, except the first, which results from the simple realization that we have lacked the courage and insight to live well-adjusted lives. Each experience proves itself as we progress, so that at no time are we required to accept any belief or idea that we have not already discovered to be true. Thus we actually lead and guide ourselves. All we require is sincerity and a little courage, and these will become stronger as we experience their benefits. Our discovery of the practical values of Zen unfolds according to a pattern of 10 steps. The first step is the experience of the pressing need for greater understanding than we now possess. The second step is the experience that it is possible for us to attain to any degree of insight necessary for our own internal security. The third step is the experience that inner peace can be attained only through the proper control of our thoughts and emotions. The fourth step is the experience that there can be no advancement of character without self-discipline. The fifth step is the experience that by self-discipline, the mental, emotional, and physical life can be brought under the control of enlightened purpose. The sixth step is the experience that control over thought and emotion can be attained without stress or tension of any kind. The seventh step is the experience that proper control makes possible the condition of complete inner quietude by gradually reducing the power of external factors to disturb the inner life. The eighth step is the experience that through quietude it is possible to become receptive to all the beauty and wisdom in the universe. The ninth step is the experience that we exist eternally in space, and that true happiness and peace of soul result from complete acceptance of the universal plan and its laws. The tenth step is the experience that pure consciousness, beyond and superior to self-will and self-purpose, leads to at-one-ment with nameless reality. Zen begins to have special meaning for us when we begin to realize that nature has bestowed upon each of us every internal resource necessary to a serene existence. We can be well-adjusted human beings. All that is required is quiet determination, diligently sustained. This is described as right-mindedness, leading to complete mental freedom. When we release ourselves from the tyranny of our own thoughts and emotions, we will discover true happiness. The gruff old Zen masters had very little patience with foolish persons. They pointed out that we all have the power of choice. When we choose to live badly, we also choose to suffer. There is no need for self-pity and no place for self-pity in the teachings of Zen. The foolish gardener is miserable because of the weeds in his garden, which bear witness only to his own neglect. The wise gardener keeps his garden free from weeds and has no cause for discontent. Weeds will not depart of themselves, nor will wrong habits correct themselves. Zen is a doctrine of direct action. The key is now. This is the moment in which we can do. But you say this moment is gone. Even as we speak, now becomes part of the past. Actually, however, now can never be the past. Time moves on, but the now stays with us always. Man is a creature that can live only now. Everything else is a psychological invention. What we call the past is simply man's memory of the past, now. What we call the future is man's hope of the future, which he is hoping now. We are non-contemporary only because we bind ourselves to something outside of ourselves, time. And time becomes the greatest tyrant in our lives. Some will say that we need the moral instruction of the past and the incentive of future hope to keep us moving forward in life. Zen does not totally discard the past and the future, but insists that the only reason we lean so heavily upon them is because the present is a vacuum. Make the present dynamically right, and that which is good in the past will live, the rest will cease. Make the present right, and that which is necessary for the future will come. But how can the individual free himself from yesterday and tomorrow so that he can live now? Zen answers this with the concept of dynamic acceptance. We generally think of acceptance as resignation to inevitables, implying that we must bear our burdens with sad dignity. But in the dynamic acceptance of Zen, there is a strong element of activeness. The word dynamic implies a certain eagerness, like that of a child exploring the world of learning. It is accepting, but the whole program is positive, for it is a motion towards self-improvement. Dynamic acceptance, as Zen interprets it, is an adventure in appreciation. It is the discovery not only of what we need to know, but of what we want to know. It provides us with more than knowledge or understanding by giving us the power to experience well-ordered and pleasant lives. There is also a Zen of right observation, and this revealing what should be accepted strengthens resolution and insight. We learn in due time that the way of universal law is always the best way. To understand this noble law is to be wise, and to obey this law is to be virtuous. Through the quiet practice of right observation, we become ever more attentive to ordinary happenings, discovering truth not in the extraordinary, but in the commonplace. Zen acceptance enables us to act with simplicity, to become untangled from complications. When we accept the living motions of life as they are revealed to us by our own sense perceptions, we achieve a new relationship with life. All natural processes move to the fulfillment of their purposes with magnificent directness. Nature, in its wondrous workings, sustains an infinite diversity of activity, but it is never really complicated. The complexity is within ourselves, and we solve this confusion by the simple, gracious willingness to be truthful and factual, and lovingly accept the obvious realities that are within our comprehension. There is a mysterious solving power that comes to us when we accept the rightness of the divine purpose. It is not easy, however, to make this acceptance in a meaningful way unless we have attained a state of inner quietude. And this peace from within is something that seems especially difficult to find in our way of life. We are surrounded constantly with the noise of traffic and industry, confused by the demands of friends and adversaries, and burdened with obligations and responsibilities. In the midst of this sound and fury, each of us must find his own way to a quietude of spirit. First of all, we should remember that it is not necessary to take on confusion simply because it exists around us. We can move through it and beyond it to values that are forever strong. The Zen disciple does this with a simple statement that deserves our most thoughtful consideration. In the face of worldly turmoil, he says, "This is not I, and because it is not I, it cannot disturb my consciousness unless I permit it to do so." Through acceptances, we gradually learn to become aware of the lessons of life, and most of all, what these lessons mean to us. We become aware of the realities of laws and principles, forever operating in the world around us and the world within us. Through these discoveries, we come to have a solid foundation under faith. We learn to love laws that once we feared. we experience the universe as beautiful and lawful, and we find the security that comes to those who take their refuge in the law. The practice of Zen, therefore, helps us to live with law, to move with law, and finally, in perfect faith, to permit the law to move us according to its own will.
This is the end of the recording on side one. Turn the cassette over to play side two.